Hello and welcome to episode 3 of the Poolside Pass podcast. On today's episode, we're going to be speaking about developing para swimmers. Today's guest is Glenn Smith, a very well accomplished swimming coach in the UK and over the world, helping swimmers to win in Paralympic medals. It was a topic I really wanted to cover. As a coach, I've not had the opportunity to work with many para swimmers at all, so it was interesting for me to touch base with Glenn and hear some of his experiences working in the top end of para swimming. Before we get into the interview with Glenn, it's just a quick line from our sponsors, Streamlined. Become a qualified swimming teacher with Streamlined in as little as 6 days. Learn at your own pace and be guided by our expert tutors. You can do your training face-to-face, online in real time, or a combination of the two. Assessment can be in your club using videos or attending one of our assessment venues. We offer tailored, high-quality support. Quote, the Poolside Pass for an extra 10% discount. Okay, so I think it's about time I introduce Glenn. Glenn Smith, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Hi, thanks. Yeah.
So for those of you that don't know Glenn, Glenn's a coach with 25 years experience, two-time British Para Coach of the Year, and also a winner of UK Coaching's Musambani Medal. So very accomplished coach. Glenn, why don't you just give us a little bit of background of you within the sport and coaching?
Yeah, sure. So I started off as everybody, well, people that obviously listen to your podcast as well. I started off as a competitive swimmer myself. And I swam at my local club. It's in Leicestershire. I'm still living in Leicestershire as it is. I wasn't that particularly great. I got to sort of made nationals in 1979, which were at Leeds at the Old Pool. And I swam backstroke, so I was trying to negotiate the funny roof that was there. So it's made to go all over the place in the lanes, but I managed to get there and I managed to make the final. I was 13, 100 backstroke. And I continued on from till I was about 23. I swam at the City of Leicester swim squad for a good few years as well. But I say I finished, I sort of retired from competitive swimming when I was 23. And then I took on the role of head coach at my local club, a small club in Leicestershire now, it's Colville Swimming Club. My mother had been very much involved, and my father previously to that. She was president for many, many years. As well, and she became president of Leicestershire ASA, so it was a sort of a swimming sort of family, if you like. But we're also in it was a mining town, and my family was involved in mining, coal mining. So that's where I sort of started my employment, if you like. I was in a desk job in the coal for British Coal or the National Coal Board when I first started. But then I was always doing voluntary coaching as well. So it's sort of like, we were heavily involved in the local swimming club. And then I took all my sort of coaching qualifications and my club coach, as it was then, and my ASA coach, I actually took with Bill Furness, and that was in Nottingham. And it was just a matter of being in the right place at the right time. And it's just these things that's how they usually end up. It's actually just being in the right place at the right time. And I applied for the post in Mansfield, which was the swimming development officer and coach. Okay. And I was fortunate enough to get it. And that was in 1996. So 24 years later, I'm still there now. So it's been a long journey. So I've been very lucky. So we've had like Rebecca Adlington, that's sort of we talent ID number Rebecca Adlington. I coached her until she was about 13. Before she moved to Bill, and then obviously the rest is history, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then the first Paralympic swimmer was Callum Lawson. He made the Paralympics in 2004 for Athens. So he actually went on to be a swimming coach himself. And then obviously we've had, Ollie, Charlotte Henshaw, Sam and Ollie Hines, and then between them they've actually, gained sort of, I think there's 10 Paralympic medals that they won between the years 2008 to 2016. So, and out of those 10 Paralympic medals, there's 4 gold medals. So it's been a long journey. So, and then I've placed athletes on world-class teams and world-class programs as well. So So it's been quite a nice journey. So, but I would say I've been very lucky, I think, over the years to have some great people to work with.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about developing world-class paraswimmers, which is something you've managed to do over your career.
Yeah.
What's your, let's just start by getting your kind of definition of world-class. When someone says something's world-class, what do you associate that with?
Well, I've always worked to think that world-class, it can either be two things. It can be actually a specific thing that people work on. Can be that that person's got world-class technique, or it can be world-class work ethic, or et cetera. But my thoughts around a world-class athlete is somebody that's performed at the top level for a period of time, or some period of time over a period of years. And with that, that can be, some people will argue whether it's 2 years or 3 years or 8 years or 10 years, so it's just dependent. But I think somebody who's consistently performing, it's all about consistency, doing something well. And I think that's, if you look at somebody like Adam Peaty, who's done it consistently over a period of time, you would say he is a world class. You look at Federica Pellegrini as an Italian great swimmer, female swimmer, who's done it for years over a period of time. And you look at Katinka Hossu, you look at Ellie Simmons for that fact, from a para point of view. And obviously I put Ollie and Charlotte in that bracket as well, who did the business over a long period of time. And my always said, when I was on the team in London and I went to Rio, I always thought that Sasha Kindred was a great example of somebody who was a world-class para swimmer. So that's my idea of a world-class person, or my definition of world-class. Whether it's the right one, it's people's opinion, I think.
Would you say that in para sport, athletes' careers tend to be longer, or?
I think they can be. It depends, obviously, the classification. You tend to find the longer period of time in the lower classifications, or the middle classifications. Some people's at the top, the sort of S9, 10s tend to, their careers are probably a little bit shorter, but it is very much about the classification, the classification segment that they're in, basically. Yeah. And I think that is, so it doesn't necessarily, yes, but the you do find it the opposite way, and I think we'll talk about that in a bit, is that they tend to start early. There's an early part of it as well, where they become, they can be younger athletes that get on senior teams, so they have a long period of time through that period. Now that can either be a blessing, or it can be a problem. So I think we'll talk about that in a moment.
With Ellie Simmons, what was she, 13, 14?
When she went 13 in Beijing, yes.
Beijing, so yeah. You wouldn't see a 13-year-old, what an athlete winning.
No, you wouldn't, no. Well, it's very unlikely, put it that way. I'm sure somebody might come along eventually and really surprise us, but it's probably unlikely, yes, that's right.
Yeah. So you've had great success, with mainly Sam, Ollie Hine, Charlotte Henshaw, etc.
Yeah.
And then you've also seen, being part of Nova Centurion and having worked with Bill Furness as well.
Yeah.
You've seen some great able-bodied swimmers such as Rebecca Adlington develop through the program.
Yeah.
What would you say would be the differences in kind of the physiological side of the coaching for those swimmers? With para swimmers and able-bodied swimmers?
I don't think there's not, the physiological side is not too much difference, I think. Well, obviously there is, because obviously para swimmers and able-bodied swimmers, there's obviously some impairments that you've got to work through as well. So there is difference in that. I mean, when I work with Ollie, it's about him managing his week as well, because he has to manage his impairments. So some days he'll feel absolutely great, and then other days he won't feel so great. It's a good, because he's got muscular dystrophy, so we have to work around that. Obviously there's not, it's more working with the athlete, I think, as well. So it's not especially there's not much differences in the early development of athletes, I don't think. There's very little, whether they're para athletes or able-bodied, really. There's not a lot of differences in working with them. And I think, but as they matured and progressed, it was like working with them together. So So as we matured into senior athletes, my approach became more a bit more humanistic with them. So it's a bit more of a psychological way of working with people, really. So it was more like I gradually gave them more input in what we were doing, yeah. Whether it be the physiological side, whether it be the training program that we were doing, whether it was the training week that they did. We sat down together, especially the years leading into Rio. It was quite heavily like that. We actually sat down together and worked things out together, what we were going to do that week, what we might do this month. And it was all about working together. And I think, it was like their competition schedule. We'd work together. So, but you could only do that with maturing athletes. You wouldn't be doing that with youngsters. It would be more like, this is the way it is and this is the way it's got to be. But I think as we go up a little bit older, that's how it was. And you can see that as well. And when Becky moved to with Bill, it was like, and then they gradually got into this partnership way, and then actually how they actually developed that partnership and how they work. So it's about a coach-athlete relationship on the physiological side as well. You know what I mean? You've got Adam and Mel Marshall, Adam and PT Mel Marshall. You've got the same principle there, you know. And then myself, Ollie, Charlotte, and yeah. And it's still like that now with Ollie now. We still, you know, many, many years down the line, 15, 16 years down the line, we still sit down together and think about how we're going to plan the year or what's going to be the thing. Obviously, the main aim is it was going to be the Paralympic trials in April, but it's going to be the Paralympic trials now in 2021. So that's what we're aiming for now. So it's that partnership, I think. It's, you know, there's not a lot of differences at the beginning. But I think there's a lot of differences that you can work into that as they mature through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So talking now around kind of planning the season with, especially with the Paralympic Games and some of the major para events.
Yeah.
Happening in September.
Yes. Yeah.
Later than the end of your traditional season.
Yeah.
How do you kind of plan around that? If you've got athletes in the same group as kind of their able-bodied peers, you might just need a period of time off through August, but you've then got your athletes then training into a big meet. How do you manage that?
Well, over the years, it's been quite difficult. I mean, because obviously able-bodied athletes, their nationals have always been in July, August time. So, and then their season finishes and they go off on their holidays. Whereas I had Sam Hind, Ollie, Charlotte, all doing, you know, Paralympics in the 4-year cycle, or it might be another major championship, which could have been European Championships, it could have been World Championships in between, and they were always later on, and they were always in August, or Paralympics obviously lent in, sort of crept into September, so you had to sort of work that through, and I can remember, funny enough, I can remember being with Sam. Come to mind when I can remember being with Sam Hyde in August or the late August, watching Becky do the 800 meters in Beijing while I was with him in Manchester, doing some long course training with him at the centre as it still is now for Paralympic swimmers. And I remember watching her doing the 800 meters freestyle at 3 a.m. So, I mean, what's me and him watching it together? So our season was still going on as everybody else had finished, and it was a case of like planning for that. And obviously, while she was in Beijing, and obviously he went to Beijing, and I can remember him doing some great sets that week. So he was, you know, we did some broken 400s, I think, and he actually smashed the world record each one. So I knew he was in great shape, and he went on to break the world record. Yes, he broke world record that, but in that Paralympics. So I knew. So he was just about planning for that length of season.
Yeah.
And I think generally, I plan for the Paralympics. You know, it's going to be a long year. Okay. So because obviously, so you might have to start if you know that somebody's got a real great chance of making that team. You may have to start off a bit slower in September. You may have to give that. They may have a longer break, so they may not come back till mid-September or even. I think at one point, I think we nearly got to October when we were first starting. So because the season was going to be that long,
yeah,
I think you have to plan for that as well. So it's all about being, you know, making sure they have recovery in it. But I can also remember in 2016 that Sam and sorry, Ollie and Charlotte, they had quite a few camps as well, warm weather stuff. So it was sort of catered for now, if you know what I mean, yeah. Rather than me having to hang around in Mansfield for weeks on end, trying to get them prepared. But I mean, I did that at one point, but I think things are a little bit more planned and well planned now. So there is some warm weather stuff that they can do, and with the GB team, etc. And they do take them away and get them. And there's a team element to all that as well. So that's obviously taken on board as well. So I think that those things are all put in place as well.
Did you ever find that when, if you've ever had them kind of, when they've come through the same setup and you've got your able bodied swimmers and their kind of end of season meet, whether it be nationals or Olympic Games or something like that, and your para swimmers are still in training.
Yes.
You know, they're aware of what their peers are doing and that they're swimming fast and breaking records. Do you find that aids the preparation to the meet? Because it just gives them that knowledge that, you know, everyone else is swimming well and that the program they're on is successful for this season.
So you mean in terms of like their taper as well and things like that? I mean, I think that's pretty important. I mean, I think I can go back to 2015 World Championships in Glasgow. We had a bit of a disrupted year because we changed things around quite a lot. I was doing something like a traditional sort of three threshold sets a week, usual stuff. I sat down with the head coach of para swimming at the time, and we changed things around a little bit. I'd never done this before. We then went into Olbrich sort of work, where there was a lot of aerobic stuff. We did sort of 8:25s after each session, where that sort of recruited the mitochondria stuff. And I'm not going to go on and do all the physiological stuff, but we changed things a lot around that year. And I think that was quite a big year. But as we moved in towards the World Champs, we changed things around. I knew that they were going to swim well because they'd actually really done some real good work in training. I think if you know that that's happening, then yes, they can have people do have bad meets and things like that, and you nothing you can do about it. But you've got a good idea that how they're going to perform, and I did then. And I know Ollie went and broke the world record first time for 400 meters freestyle, and broke his brother's record that year. And Charlotte broke, funny enough, she broke the European record for SB 600 breaststroke 4 or 5 times that year. So it was, and previously she hadn't done a best time for 5 years. And it was, she was there about, won the odd medal, a few things like that. But that year was exceptional.
Yeah.
I think we made a change, and funny enough, the change worked. Yeah. Sometimes you make a change and it always goes, it could go awry. But we made quite a big change that year. So I'm quite pleased how that year went. And of course, I've kept that sort of model now. Little bit in my head. I don't do the Olbrich model to the full. I do bits of it, and that's how coaching is. You take things from here and put things in here and pluck another thing out from somewhere else and try and apply it to where you are, really. And that's how I've done things all the way through.
So working then with like para swimmers, guess it's the same. It doesn't really matter if you're working with an able person or a para swimmer. How do you, as a coach, make sure you understand fully who you're working with and how you can support them? Because that's ultimately what we are as coaches. We're almost in a support role for them and facilitators, really.
Yeah, we are. And that's and particularly with para swimmers, you sometimes have to do something slightly different, really, sometimes. Not ultimately, but I think you do have to do a look at things a little bit different as well. And I think sometimes with some athletes, you've got to be a bit more of a father figure to them. Sometimes you've had to go down that route, or sometimes you have to be the headmaster. So, if you like, that's how I've had to go, depending on who you're working with, I've never tried to tell my older athletes what they should do, but I've always tried to give them suggestions of how it might work, if you know what I'm talking about there. I've probably gone and I've been daft enough to go above and beyond what I'm supposed to do, as all coaches do. Do you know what I mean? So, but I think that's, I'm being honest there. But you do what's required for your athletes, and I think sometimes you do go above and beyond, That's coaching. That's the way it is. You can't get around that. You do have to be, you have to put yourself out a little bit more, do you know what I mean, to get the result, yeah. But I think that's been my personality. I've always tried to be a bit more, you know, try and help them through things a little bit more than probably I should have done, you know. And I think, you know, that can be either a blessing or it's not been a, it's worked the other way. But I think on a lot of occasions it's gone the right way, do you know what I mean? So, yeah. And I think that the other thing is as well, I've been lucky with the people I've worked with have been good listeners. So I think they've taken on new ideas as well. Do you know what I mean? And that's been, I've been able to be able to support them through it. So I think sometimes it's about knowing when you've got to give that extra support or when you've got to back off a bit. And I think that's how it's probably not a simple answer to anything really on this one. It's just knowing who you're working with really. That's it. Yeah.
Is it, you know,
I mean, I'll give you an example actually. Yeah. You're working with two different people, you know. I was at the Paralympics 2012, London. Okay. Ollie had qualified for the 200 medley final, fastest qualifier, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. And you've got to be able to deal with that. And 30 minutes after was Charlotte's race, was the SB 600 breaststroke. And I only had a half an hour to make sure they were well prepared, well, they were warmed up properly, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, and I was on the staff, so it was a case of like working with Ollie because I knew he was quite quickly into focus really for what he needed to do. Charlotte needed a bit more support, et cetera. And we hadn't had a great year that year. Charlotte hadn't had a great year. She'd been not well. And we had not a great preparation into the Paralympics, but the few weeks beforehand, she did some great work. So it was just a case, but it's knowing how to work with your athletes in those situations, you know. So it was probably the most pressurized situation I've ever been in as a coach. But I'd only got sight like I think it was like 20 minutes, I think, between two races, something like that. Yeah. So they won gold and silver. So it was a case of like, you know, working with the two people. And it just shows you how you have to work with different people at different times. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I always remember that. It was quite, probably about, I certainly probably at the end of about had a nervous breakdown afterwards, but no, but there we go. That's it. But it was quite a night that was. That's it.
Yes. So there will be coaches out there listening to this podcast who have in their squad, they'll have, you know, a group of in one group, they'll have some able-bodied swimmers and they might have a para swimmer in there as well. Yeah. How important is it to understand fully what your para swimmer can do and what their limitations are when you're coaching them in that kind of mixed setting, so you can
see what you mean. Yes, yeah. Right, so well, I can give you examples. Mostly with Sam, Ollie wasn't too bad because they were able to do roughly the same session, and Ollie still maybe to do, you know, I would say 95% of the session that I put on for the able body swimmers, he will be able to do quite easily. Yeah. So there might be slight adjustments, so he's not too bad. When you're working with lower classes or lower class, I remember Charlotte, we used to do like 2100s freestyle sets, and she'd go one on, then a 50, one on, then one and a 50. Do you know what I mean? So you'd manage it around that sort of work. I mean, obviously, we work one-to-one as well, but on certain occasions, particularly as we're leading up to major championships, so we did quite a bit of one-to-one work, but as well as I did with Ollie and Sam. But generally, you've got to try and manage that situation but you've got to realise that physiologically, they're still doing the same work, you know what I mean? So it's not a problem, providing you don't expect them to do the same as...
Yeah.
The able-bodied person next to them, they are physiologically still doing the same, and you know the effect is still the same.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just that they're doing that slight less volume.
Presenting.
So, you know, an able body S6 swimmer, sorry, a para swimmer SB6 or S6 swimmer, yeah. Going 30K a week is the equivalent of doing somebody doing 50 or 60 for an able bodied athlete. And you've just got to manage that. And that's how I managed it. And I think, it's also, you know, and also you've got to imagine that managing with their, you know, you've got to manage their expectations as well, you know, people's expectations, you know. And then give them appropriate goals with that, with the training, etc. as well. You've got to give them that sort of, you know. You can also fall into the trap with a really good para swimmer at a younger age of trying to give them too much. You're almost drifting to give them a senior program.
Yeah.
You don't want to be doing that either. So you've still got to get them to do the progression and the development work appropriate for their age, rather than thinking that they can then go straight into senior work. You've still got to be able to get that round in your head that they still need to do that.
Just because they're performing at a level where
you don't expect that they then immediately should be doing a senior program. You've got to hold yourself back. And it's difficult. It's not, you know, I mean, sometimes, you know, you might think that you need to make hay while the sun shines. But at the end of the day, you're still going to pull yourself back into the fact that they still need to do that development and progression work that they should be doing at the appropriate age for them, you know.
So a really good segue there into the next question was, a lot of para swimmers, as we discussed earlier, especially with Ellie Simmons, tend to kind of break through at that much younger age. You've got to be really careful, and how do you make sure that you manage appropriately the work they're doing in the pool? They're not imposing that kind of senior program on them.
Well, so I probably just answered that a little bit earlier. It's just a matter. I think the thing is as well, it's inevitable in some classifications with para swimming. You're going to get the younger athlete that bursts through, and get into a senior team when they're quite young. So that's always going to happen. But again, it's like you have to manage the expectation of the athlete, manage the training. And as I've said, make sure that they're in the appropriate work at the appropriate age, et cetera. And I know I'm repeating myself, but I think that's pretty much what you've got to do, really. Yeah, so that's how I did it with... I mean, Charlotte came in when she was 12. I coached her for 18 years. And we tried to manage each time that she wasn't overcooking it, if you like. And we weren't trying to be too clever and trying to do a senior program when she was only a youngster. You know, so and that's what you've got to really go. Funny enough, though, with Charlotte, she came through quite later, as a 16 plus youth swimmer. She progressed fully from there, really.
I guess you've got to make sure that although they're having, you know, great performances and great outcomes as a teenager on the senior stage, you've got to make sure that they can continue to do that, you know, into their 20s, potentially into their 30s, and making sure they've got that progression so they've always got somewhere to go in terms of their progression is important, right?
Yeah, that's right. You can't do two things too soon. You want them to have a long career. You know, we don't want to be finished. If we could avoid it, we don't want them to sort of hanging up the costumes at 15, 16, you know, if we can avoid that. You know, I'm not saying it can't happen, but you would try and make sure that it doesn't.
Yeah.
That's basically. Yeah.
So another consideration that perhaps I've noticed from... Yeah. Just, you know, I've not got a huge knowledge base on in para swimming, just from what I've seen at meets and stuff, is that they tend to swim larger programs.
Yes.
In terms of, you know, they might be more likely to be a multi-eventer than an able-bodied swimmer.
Yeah.
How does this come about, and then how do you manage to make sure they still get that kind of training that makes sure they can specialize, if that makes sense?
Yeah. If I got somebody, I mean, I've had this before. I mean, with younger para swimmers, it's not too much of an issue. You want them to try and swim quite multi events. If they're good at multi events, then you want them to do it.
Yeah.
But obviously, as they get older, Because I mean, basically, they're able to cope with it. You know, they recover pretty quickly. And they invariably they're pretty keen to do it. Do you know what I mean? You don't have too many problems. You know, but as they obviously got older, that's when the issues start to be a bit more prevalent. If you know what I mean. So I mean, obviously, with training, you've got to be trying to do it. You know. Yes, and I think with younger swimmers, it's like you do an able body swimmer. You do sort of making sure that they're doing all stroke. It's an all stroke program. And that's what you won't be trying to do a specialise in the 100 back when somebody's 12, particularly. You know, so I think that's part and parcel of that with the young, even with younger para swimmers. But as they get older, the trick is as a coach when they start to mature and recovery becomes more important. Then the coach-athlete relationships kicks in, and it's deciding what the goals are a little bit more. Do you know what I mean? And also, when you go to a Paralympics, it can be a 10, 11-day program. So, and as the older, they need more recovery, and you've got to manage that as well. So, I know that Ollie at the minute, he's not probably going to do the 200 mil. It might change. But we're working towards the 400 freestyle, you know, more now, just because he's an older athlete, really. Do you know what I mean? But he's had an input into that as well. So it's not me. Me just saying it might change, it might alter, but as we stand at this today, it might just keep to the 400 freestyle and the hunt and the backstroke. So I think that's the way we look at things, and we try and discuss things a little bit more, you know. And what are the specifics really around it, and why, you know. And also, you can get, I know that we've had to change things before when we've seen the program for major championships come out. They can be right next to one another. Do you know what I mean? And then you've got to be like, things will happen like that. Now, if you've got a gold medal chance in both, then you've got to manage it. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But it, so it might be appropriate to make sure it is appropriate for them to do both. But, you know, generally, you've got to work with the athletes on that, you know. And the Paralympic Games and major championships now for para championships are long weeks because you're going through every classification. And so it's not like, you know, they tend to be long weeks, you know, so with every different classification that there is, two or three heats in each, it's the long programs, and you've got to think what's best for the athlete.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess, to some extent, it could be almost like going to some of the level three meets I have to go to, where some of the events take because you've got to go through every single classification.
Yeah, I mean, so somebody said the old argument is that some people say, "Oh, why doesn't the Paralympics follow is integrated with the Olympic Games?" we might be there a month trying to get the swimming competition done. So it doesn't apply itself well to that. That's the truth of the matter, really, as it stands at the moment in time. Who knows what might happen in the future, but as it stands at the moment, that the two don't marry up very well on that one. It'd be nice, but that's just the way it is at the moment.
So, Glenn, we always ask at the end of each episode, ask our guests to sum up their kind of top three points for their topic. So I'm going to ask you today for your top three points for coaching world-class para swimmers.
Yeah. Oh, first one. I've had a bit of a think about this one. Obviously, it's coach the athlete, not the disability. Yeah. So always people you coach start to coach with people, para swimmers, etc. And you try and some I've seen people try and focus too much on the disability, what they've got, or their impairment, and not the athlete.
Yeah.
So I always coach the athlete and not what's the problem is. Mm-hmm. Okay, so always coach the athlete. That's the first one. And I'll say that always, and I always remember somebody telling me that. So that's one of the things, yeah. Always be prepared. The second one, always be prepared for the unexpected. I've been at para meets before and things, and something can go wrong, someone become well, unwell, etc., or somebody can be doing something different. You've always got to be prepared for the unexpected. But and that's just goes the same with able body swimming. Same thing. Always be prepared for the unexpected. So, and that's my second point. And then one thing that Bill always told me that that always goes, that sticks with me for a long time. It's, and it's about education and making sure that you're well prepared and you keep up to date with things. He always said, like, if you stand still long enough, somebody will go past you. So never stand still.
Yeah.
Make sure you're moving forward all the time and try and keep your knowledge up to date, because somebody will go past you if you stand still, basically.
Yeah, no matter how far out ahead you are either, eventually.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So don't always keep, always try and follow trends or make sure you're up to date with things. And I've tried to do that as long as I can, Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter if you don't agree with it, but at least you've got yourself up to speed with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that's right, yeah.
Anyway, okay. Excellent. I'm certainly a little better off now in terms of my knowledge for paraswimming and the kind of the nuances that go around coaching paraswimmers than I was before. So I hope those that are listening to the episode are too.
Yeah.
Glenn, thank you very much for your time.
It's a pleasure. Yeah.
And wish you well for the season, and hope post-COVID things start
moving up and moving in the right direction. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I'll take this opportunity to point our listeners towards our social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at The Poolside Pass, and also our website, www.thepoolsidepass.com. Again, thank you, listeners, for tuning in and listening. If you like the podcast, make sure you share it with other coaches that you know. And until next time, take care.